Hello world, welcome to this episode of the 404 podcast. Today I'm supported by Juke, my co-host. My guest today is Gunweil. He's a YouTuber himself, but let's make him do the talking and let him introduce himself. Wait, let's hear, chat, can you hear us? Hello, chat. Can you hear us? I'm just wondering. Only me. Like OBS does.
New arrivals.
Can yeah, okay, sorry for that. Yeah, Gunweil.
Okay, let's see if it works now.
So do some quick introduction about yourself. So.
Okay, hi, I'm Gunweil. I do computer stuff. And I don't know, I'm mostly doing IT security stuff. And also programming, I guess. And I'm here because Zanit told me it's a fun place to be today.
I'm a good liar.
Oh, jeez.
Okay, it works.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah, it should work now. Like now, okay, it works. Okay, it perfectly. Works. So then Lovely. We can go on and start with the show. And as always, we will be starting with the hacker quiz, which still hasn't got a better name. Juke. A quick explanation for the people that are here for the first time. We are going to ask Gunweil four questions, and if he fails, he gets punished. Every time he fails, he has to tweet something, and every time he fails, the tweet gets worse and worse. So, Juke, can you do us the honor and ask the first question?
Of course I can. So, your first question. It's a true or false question. We got a group of 12 engineers designed IMB PC, and they were called the Dirty Dozen. Now, is that true or false?
It's IBM PC, not IBM.
I can English correctly.
Okay, I'm going to go with a true.
A true? Okay. Well, let's see. Drum roll. Yeah, it's true.
Nice.
Oh. Okay, I actually thought I was going for an incorrect one. Just to see what kind of tweets you have prepared for me, but okay. Lucky me.
Okay. Next one. I'll do the honor this time. And they're all true or false questions, except for one. This is one of the true or false ones. JavaScript was invented by a Swedish man in 1995.
Yeah, that sounds about right. True.
False. It's an US-American man, and not a Swedish one.
Yeah.
That's one fail.
Oh.
That's
one fail. Oh, okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Just so you know, the tweet you have to tweet for one fail is pretty simple. It's not bad at all. It's like, join me and Zanit on the hashtag 404 podcast on YouTube and the link to the live stream, but it's the wrong link for now.
I think I already tweeted it, but okay, like we can do another tweet like that.
Woohoo! All right.
Let me get the right link.
All right, so while he's doing that, I'll ask the third question. or I guess I'll say the third statement. All right, statement number three, you have to determine this is true or false, all right? Yeah. So, true or false, you can exit Vim with colon E.
With colon E. No, that's false.
Well, you are right. It is false.
E is for opening files, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
It's like edit. It's very confusing.
Master hacker over here.
Because colon...
Yeah, to exit Vim, you just power off.
you can exit Vim by just typing colon exit, but you cannot, like, shortcut it with the E.
I mean, kind of sucks, but it's whatever, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of like open source UX. There's this school of making things as hard as possible in Emacs, like Vim, Gimp, and other similar stuff. So, or like Blender. Blender is amazing, but if you are like, do not know anything about Blender and you want to start learning it, you're like, it's like Vim or all over again.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need like someone to like step you through it, kind of.
Yeah, I think that's because mostly open source stuff is made by programmers without any designing UX or UI interest or skills.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, true. Makes you like appreciate the UX folks more.
Oh, yes. Definitely.
Yeah.
Okay, so the last one is a quote from a movie, but it's translated to Japanese and back into English, and you have to guess the movie. And the quote is, English guy, tell it. Did I like e-rape right now?
That is Pulp Fiction.
Oh, yes, exactly.
What? Oh, my God. Dude's destroying us.
Oh, man, just one fail.
All right, so one feels pretty tame.
Yeah.
I think anyway, here I'll put...
And it's been well.
Yeah. There it is. All right. Weak sauce, dude. All right.
We have to find harder questions.
Yeah, okay, I'll treat it for next time.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Okay, so now that we've warmed up a little bit, let's talk about your favorite topic, Ginwile. Let's talk about you.
Perfect.
Like, let's guide this a little bit. How or why? Like, why did you start with hacking and security?
Kind of by accident, actually. Since I always thought I would be a game designer, a game developer, and like most of my first years of programming, first like I don't know, 10 years of programming, I was always going for games. And then on some IRC channels, some folks started basically posting links to the early war games. And I had a lot of fun with them. So, yeah, that kind of guided me that way in the end. And then at some point, you know, when I was older on my university, it came to a decision like, hey, I love both game making and I both love security right now. So which way should I go in terms of making money? And, well, there is, you know, the... crunch time, always crunch time in game design, or there is the actual cool research and security. So yeah, definitely, that's what definitely. I chosen.
That's funny because like I started with the intention to become a game developer as well.
Cool.
Well, actually, funny story. My brother's fiance does a lot of game art stuff, and She was like, she would always talk about how she was like, if I get offered like a spot at like EA or Ubisoft or like any of the big names, I'm just gonna turn it down because it's like the crunch becomes so big. But then for like the indie stuff, you can potentially, the company goes bankrupt or runs out of money or whatever, and you're kind of shit out of luck.
Yeah, but
yeah,
you can always, like, you have the same problem with startups in the in the tech scene as well. Like, I think it's like one out of 10 startups doesn't go bankrupt at the moment.
Oh,
I think maybe that's because there are so many startups.
Well, it is like hard, like everything is hard. Like why would startups be easy for some reason?
Yeah,
I just need an idea and then I'll get rich.
Oh yeah. If ideas would be like just transformed into money with some magic, that would be great.
Yeah, $100 bucks flat rate per idea.
Chief idea officer. That would be a nice job.
Yeah.
It actually might make a lot of sense, in all honesty. Like, if you have a big company, even just have a person who sits there and is creative all day, that sounds actually pretty cool and pretty useful.
I mean, isn't that kind of like what investing basically is? You know, like you submit an idea and people fund it, and then you go run off into the Bahamas.
Last time I checked, the last part differed, but yeah, yeah.
They start calling, and you're just like, oh, it's in the beginning. You know, we're starting up, and then you burn the phone number.
But back to Gunwale. So you have a YouTube channel as well, and
yes,
like
actually two
YouTube channels. Why do you have two YouTube channels?
One is in Polish and one is in English.
And you do the same on both of them, or is one like a cat video channel and the other is about security?
No, my English one is purely about cat videos, and I do different stuff because my Polish one's about dog videos. But, well, both are actually about programming and hacking, but I do different stuff since I know that a lot of folks who do speak Polish also speaks English, but it's not really a better way around. But since still there is this overlap, right, it would be like part of my English video watching crowd would be rewatching the same stuff, which doesn't make much sense.
Yeah.
So in the end, I'm just using like different topics for each channel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, there are like a lot of problems with that in the end, because like, for example, I have this really cool topic on one channel, like for example, on the Polish channel, but I cannot redo it immediately, at least on the English channel. So yeah, it gets delayed, but there are problems and there are solutions.
Yeah, like the last one I saw was a live stream. Like you mostly do live streaming.
Currently, yes.
Yeah, I saw that you like did some vlogging or like tech vlogs last
tried
year.
Tried to.
But mostly you do like 4 hour long live streams about Google or CTF.
Well, mostly I do 2 hours. It was the last week's one was 4 hours because I wanted to go through all challenges in the beginner's quest. So it's like this. When I started my YouTube channel, it was only videos, right?
Yeah.
And then I decided I do not really have time to make a video because, well, you know yourself how much time it takes to do a proper video, which is nice, which is properly edited and so on and scripted. So I decided I do not really have that kind of time, sadly. So I, like a friend that suggested doing live streams, and I started doing live streams, and that's actually way less time consuming as in 2 hour live stream that just takes like 2.5 hours maybe. And now when I have everything set up, I tried with vlogs because the vlogs don't require so much editing, and I actually had a person helping me with editing anyway. I'm not a vlog person, I think. I will try probably that again someday, but I find it hard to record something which is not as formal as a video, just a vlog where you talk about something. I always go into this, yeah, it must be perfect, and then vlogs by definition are not supposed to be perfect, so I struggle with this.
Yeah. I mean, perfectionism is a good trait, bad trait. I don't know, man.
Yeah, it's like perfect is the enemy of good, right?
On
the other hand, yeah, all depends on the exact case.
Yeah.
So your plans for the channel are like doing some vlogs in the future?
So currently it's still live streaming. When I for some reason actually find more time on my hands, I would love to do proper videos like you do or Life Overflow does.
So like proper, like not vlogs, but like videos about the topic.
Yeah,
you could do like condense some of the live streams topic into a 10-minute video.
Probably, but to so that it's actually, you know, looks good, it's actually making a video on its own, right? So it's not like I can reuse the material from live stream anyway. I just have to do it from scratch, basically.
Yeah.
Well, kind of from scratch.
Yeah, but you can like I saw one that you did about dumping NES ROM or SNES ROM, not sure.
Yeah, but it was SNES.
And I think like some of the material that like some of the video could be reused in a video about dumping ROMs.
That's true.
Like it's not like that you can use much of it, but like as a B-roll maybe. If you're familiar with the term.
Not really.
Like B-roll is used for like video material that you shoot as like secondary stuff, like when you do a vlog and you talk and all of a sudden your voice is still there, but the video is like something that suits the topic or the Bahamas or something like that.
Oh, okay.
That's like what
you see, I learned something today.
So I think I have a question from the viewers for you. When are we going to get a Minecraft channel?
Well, in all honesty, we kind of started with that already because the last challenge in Google Beginner's Quest last week was a mine test, actually, which is our implementation of Minecraft challenge. So there was some Minecraft-ish thingy on my channel already. As you probably know, I am going to switch to full-time Minecraft somewhere next year. So yeah, do expect that. Yes, but that's a joke.
Yeah, I see like a lot, like after like a lot of people are asking for Minecraft videos from every YouTuber now.
Yeah,
it's a common meme.
It's become a meme, but I feel like it's just kind of also because like the quality of Minecraft has like only been like directly varied with its popularity, you know? Because, like, a year ago, everyone was like, oh, Minecraft's bad. And now it's like, Keemstar will not... What? Who knows, man?
Sorry, didn't hear. Couldn't hear you.
Oh, sorry. Basically, Minecraft good, Fortnite bad.
Yeah, so, and honestly, I didn't play either, so sorry.
Yeah, so we're really looking forward to your blind Let's Play of Minecraft next year with your new videos.
I guess, like, we did stream with Live Overflow playing Apex Legends last week, so why not Minecraft?
Okay, I see now a lot of hacking channels are moving over to Minecraft.
But you know, instead of like 16k subs like you have right now, you could have 1,600,000,
yeah,
right?
I know.
Just switch to Minecraft like 1 week and you're there.
Yeah, but then I had to like actually play Minecraft and it's very time consuming.
I guess. It's like modern version of Lego. It is really cool, like the idea though.
Yeah, there's like Apple presented a new iOS app, Minecraft Earth, or something that's like basically AR mixed with Minecraft on your smartphone.
How is that supposed to work? Are you running around with like a pickaxe and destroying buildings?
No,
buildings?
You're like, the phone is your first person view, and you can look around in the world. It uses like your camera, and you can then build on top of the real world. You can like virtually build stuff with Minecraft blocks.
Okay, and if you do not, like if you are too far from something because you've built already like one floor and you want to build another, you just go onto a tree and then, or like on a high building roof and continue. That sounds great.
You can actually resize the whole like playing field.
Ah.
Like you, okay. I think you have to play it on a plane, like on a plane field, on a table or something like that.
Not an airplane. Okay. that's pretty cool though. Like if it's yeah, like that's pretty cool.
Yeah, but Microsoft did something similar with.
With their, the glasses, right?
Yeah, with their glasses, like build. I think it's pretty cool because you can play Lego without having to clean it up afterwards.
Or stepping on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
And you can like reload it, so you don't have to rebuild it every time.
Yeah.
It's like a child's dream come true.
And you can just download new parts from the internet instead of going for a shop trip, like after you convince your parents.
Like,
well, unless it's just... like microtransactions. Like, yeah, sorry, I didn't say anything. If Apple didn't figure it out, then don't tell them.
Yeah, I think...
yeah, you gotta buy the awesome block, and it's only $3. Or you get a loot crate where you get like 6 blocks, you know, loot at random.
Exactly.
Yeah, like,
I guess it's too late. Like the secret's already out on the internet now.
Guaranteed at least 2 rare blocks.
Yeah.
So how did we end up talking about Minecraft?
I'm not sure anymore. Oh yeah, we were talking about your channel. That's right. To not talk.
All right, the question.
Like, so that to make sure that we don't derail into Minecraft again, we are not going to talk about your channel, but about what you actually do outside of YouTube. Are you like a full-time YouTuber?
No. It's like I'm a Sunday YouTuber.
A Sunday YouTube.
Sunday, so, you know, like Sunday drivers.
Yeah.
So do you post a YouTube video and then go to church, or do you go to church then post a YouTube video?
Next question.
He builds a church in Minecraft and goes to the church in the video.
Yeah, denomination of Minecraft. We do have another question. How do you balance work, CTFs, YouTube, and your other interests?
Yeah, it is a good question, and it's a hard question. So I don't have a golden answer for you, and I don't think one exists. I basically try to, spend most of the time on the things I like to do the most, which means all the things which I have to actually do pile up. So I guess I'm a deadline-driven person. Which I, you know, I'm not a coach. I will not recommend it anyway. So this is like, I do not recommend being a deadline-driven person, but it sometimes works for me.
Yeah, definitely.
And for YouTube, it's again, as I was saying, like, I stopped doing videos, which take a lot of time, and started doing live streams, which take a lot less time, actually.
They just like instantaneously kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, there's like a little overhead on doing some work around it, like, you know, the decorations and then scripting. And thankfully, I had also a lot of help with my live streams, with my moderators, right, and my crew. Well,
especially, I feel like the whole Streamlabs OBS, which is what a lot of streamers use, it just kind of like makes all the like stress of just like trying to integrate OBS or like whatever streaming software you're using of like a bunch of plugins, and then one's not working suddenly, like during your stream. It's just like, it's very easy for someone to like go from, you know, oh, I'm a beginner in technology or computers or whatever, to like suddenly being able to like host a stream where it's able to like, you know, donate and like, you know, notifications on the stream and shit like that.
Yeah, I fully agree. That being said, it didn't work for me like that because I have a not invented here syndrome, a pretty hard one. And basically, I've coded all the plugins except for the browser one, and all the scripting and the browser one is also custom.
This is a hella weird flex. I'm not even going to...
Yeah, I do not recommend it. Just download the plugins, like spend $10 and buy a packet. It was fun though, but
yeah.
We have another question from the crowd. What inspired you to make a CTF team?
Okay, I'm sorry, this answer is going to be terrible, but it's actually true. I spotted the CTF time ranking, and I messaged Mateusz Jurczyk, Juru, like, hey, there's a ranking, how about we make a team and we win it? And that's what I did. So the story here is that we actually played some CTFs and like war games and other hacking competitions in the past, like from 2003, I guess. And so, but not, you know, not regularly like with a CTF team. And we just didn't know there's such a thing like CTF time, like a whole global ranking. Wow. And we actually had a lot of successes when we played, but we played like once a year, maybe twice a year. So once we spotted the ranking and we are both pretty ranking driven people, we decided like, hey, that we're making a team totally. And it actually worked out.
Yeah. Sure as hell did.
Yeah, I know it's not a humble answer, but I never claimed to be humble.
So let's go on to the next topic, since we like already a half an hour into it. And it's like, you are bringing out a new online magazine, like the Paged Out scene. Can you explain what Paged Out is or will be?
Okay, so basically the idea is that it's going to be an experimental free magazine about stuff which I like, in all honesty, which is going to be programming, security, reverse engineering, like demo scene, electronics, and some other stuff which is listed on the website. Now, it's experimental because it's going to be in a weird model where one article is basically one page, only one page. And the author of the article can actually like do whatever layout they like, because we are not going to do the layout, our authors are going to do the layout. Because if you have only one page, you sometimes want to squeeze something in, do some weird stuff, and we wanted to allow authors to do it. And it also does save some time on our site when we want to put the number together, if we can just take a ready-to-go article and put them together for a magazine. And it's basically also, well, you know, everyone knows like POC or GTFO, right? Mm. And it's a great magazine and I really love it. And they had this great model where they also publish for free both PDFs and I guess the print files. So what folks do, folks basically print the magazine and give it out on conferences. I also did it for POC or GTFO. I gave it out on one of my conferences. And I really like that idea. So that's also what I want to do with Paged Out. So it's going to be basically the print files and the PDF version will be online for free download. And yeah, let's see how it goes. The whole idea basically is because I'm doing reviews for, well, currently only for one magazine, which is a Polish magazine about programming, which is called Programista. And one thing which struck me is that all articles I'm reviewing currently are like 20 pages. Mm. And that's, I then went back to a magazine I was buying when I was learning this stuff and I was like 7 years old or 6 years old or like 10 years old. And articles back then on one page, well, okay, the page was a little larger than A4, but on one page you had like three or four articles. Most of them were just code, a little explanation, and you just like, you know, transcribed the code and had to figure out what does it do without anyone guiding you by your hand. And I really enjoyed it. And I also decided that maybe like 20-page articles are great and they explain a lot. And explaining stuff does take a lot of space. But maybe there is this thing with this area of articles which we are not currently exploring, which we are not creative in as a scene, like short articles. So how about I focus a magazine on that, on short articles which are exactly one page? You cannot write like, you know, a full C++ tutorial in one page, but there are things like if you have this weird little programming trick, which is totally not for 20 pages because it would take like 2 pages at most to write about it. How about you write about it for Paged Out? Because, you know, just squeeze it into one page and where we have an article.
Sounds very interesting. And so everybody that wants to submit something has to submit one page and one page only. And yeah, they can
and then
talk...
it goes through a process, through a review process.
Yeah. So you do still review what you get.
Yeah, we have like the Paged Out Institute, as we call it, like the people who do the reviews. We have quite a lot of smart people who know a lot of stuff. So if we get an article, we try to work with an author to or authors about you know, fixing the language, making sure that everything is technically correct, there are no typos, like the code works, and so on.
Oh,
like
cool.
These people, thankfully, have a lot of experience with reviewing books before they were published, and so on. So I'm really happy that they are helping me with it. And this also increases the quality. The authors are also great, always cooperating with us and, you know, making the fixes and also contributing a lot during the review process. So this is going actually super well. Like, we have a great community.
That's very cool, because I was afraid that, like, one page could be too less, or maybe... I wasn't sure if you would like check the technical aspect as well, but it's very interesting to know that. I think it will increase the quality. So the topics are like mainly security and software engineering.
So currently the whole idea is that there should be, I can actually fetch the list. So I'm going to read throughout the list. The list is, programming, especially programming tricks, hacking, security hacking, retro computers, modern computers, electronics, demo scene, and other similar topics, like, for example, amateur radio. And so these are the topics. Now, the topics are one thing, and what articles are being submitted are a different thing. And most of the articles which were submitted are security, which I guess makes a lot of sense because, you know, folks who... I don't know, follow me, for example, on Twitter, mostly are related to security. And I do not have a great context on, for example, the retro computers or demo scene. So that's why we are missing articles there. But it's still going quite nicely, I would say. And we have like 39 articles, I believe, submitted. So, or 40 articles even submitted. So that will make the first issue actually quite rich in content.
Yeah, so you even have a cover art. Looks pretty
Yeah, we actually have like we actually have 5 cover arts already.
Oh, that's
for,
so. From the same artist, like the first one?
No, actually 2 are from the same artist and the rest are from different artists.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I really liked like the first one.
Yeah, I really love it as well. Like, the artist did a great job.
The colors.
It gives it a very aesthetic, you know, vibe. It just, I don't know. I love aesthetic. So whenever I see like something like Vaporwave, I'm just like, I gotta get that now.
Unironically, Vaporwave.
Yeah. So the colors are basically, you know, the colors are blue and violet, which are the colors which I'm also using on my live streams and so on. So I just went with my default colors, in all honesty. And I asked all the artists to use these colors. Mostly, like, these should be dominant colors. In one case, they aren't, but the artist did a great job with using gray, like, gray colors, grayscale, basically, and then just going with accents in these two colors. Mm-hmm. So expect all the covers to be in similar aesthetics with, like, similar dominant colors.
Nice. Looking forward to them. So when can you give us, like, a date or when the first issue will be available to
I
the public?
I hope it will be available at the beginning of next month, so like in 3 weeks.
Oh.
Give or take.
Okay.
Unless our PDF merging scripts fail hard.
Yeah, but I heard you have like a very good experience with scripting everything yourself.
Yes, but I also have like, I'm working with great people in the Paged.out Institute, and the PDF merging scripts are actually on Foxtrot Charlie, who is my, you know, also my moderator on my YouTube channel. So if anything fails, it's, you know, it's Foxtrot, it's not me, Charlie. But we'll get it to work.
Yeah, so thank you for the information about Paged Out.
Thank you for asking.
I'm really looking forward to it. Like, I even had an idea to post on it, but I'm not sure. It's like more in the IoT space on what I'm currently doing.
Yeah, you should write an article. Actually, everyone listening should write an article.
Wink,
please.
Wink, wink, nudge, wink, wink.
Wait, let me post the URL. This should be the correct one.
It is. Yes, it is. Pagedout.institute.
So, if you don't mind me asking, why .institute? Why not, you know, like .net or .com?
That was like a decision made when browsing through available domains, and I was like, oh, .institute, that sounds cool. I'm going for it. I totally wanted to go for like .org or whatever. So, yeah, it wasn't planned. It was spontaneous.
So, the chat has a question. What's the total count on how many times, like? I guess he's asking because I'm saying like all the time. Maybe somebody can count them and put a counter in the comments.
Yippee. we did get a question at the beginning. When is the right time to transition from an enthusiast to a professional of security?
That's an excellent question. I'm not sure I'm the proper person to answer it because I always find myself transitioning late. Like, I get an occasion like to transition, I get a chance, and then I just pass it and I go for the next one. So I'm not sure I'm the proper person to ask about it. But basically, it's like this. If you're able to find a job, as in pass the interviews, that means you're ready. If you're not able to pass the interviews, that means like keep learning and keep trying. So yeah, you might have problem. One always has problems judging their own skill. It's called the Kruger-Dunning effect, right? Which means that ask somebody who is, for example, in the industry, ask them to like chat with you about your skills, what you can do, what you cannot do, and ask them if they think you are ready. That will give you a better opinion than like a better quality of like your skills, I would say, like estimation of your skills than you can tell it always yourself. So yeah, chat with somebody from the industry. If they say you're ready, just go for it.
Well, that was a lovely answer. I do believe it is time to transition to another topic. One that I do believe you love to talk about, floats.
Quotes.
Floats.
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 Yeah. Perfect. My main question is, why do you like floats so much?
It's a good question. I guess like usually programmers have this love and hate relationship with floats, right?
Mm.
That they are saying like don't use floats, or for some appliances like use floats but like be super careful about them, and I also like that as well for most of my career, I guess. And then I started writing a book about programming, and in one of the chapters was purely dedicated on floats, and I had to do like in-depth research about it because the book is like super technical.
Mm.
And I started to appreciate them a lot when I started to dig into all the details. I guess like I knew already most of the stuff anyway, but the details were pretty beautiful as well. So yeah, now I really enjoy floats. I really like them, and I understand them a lot better than I did like years ago.
What are like the details that you like so much about them?
So for example, one of the detail is about how like a common knowledge is that you should never use the equality operator or equality comparison between floats, because that's a a way to shoot yourself in the foot, right? But if you actually know exactly how flows are formed, how they are translated from the decimal version to the binary encoding, you know where in which cases you can actually use the equality operator without any problems. So that's one of the details which I like. Like I know that if I start adding 0.1 to like 10 times in a float, and then I want to compare that with 1, it will just not work because 0.1 is not representable in binary floats. But if I use like 0.125, I know that's perfectly representable in binary floats, and I can like use a equality operator without any problems. So very like details like that. Another detail is in the encoding, for example, both 32 and 64-bit floats, like the default ones, have this implied 1 point something at the beginning. It's not encoded in the value, but it's implied. But like, for example, the 80-bit float, the Intel 80-bit float doesn't have this one, and it's not implied. And there are a couple of funny things you can do when it's not implied, because that means you can encode a certain value, like a certain decimal value, in several different binary encodings, and all of them are identical to each other. So that's another example. Then when we get into the details, for example, there is like the 8-bit computers, like, you know, Commodore 64 or Atari had a different implementation, a 5-byte implementation of floats. And if you actually played Google CTF, I think a year ago on the qualification round, there was a task from C64 where I on purpose used the proper numbers in the C64 floats, which could not work neither with 32 or 64 bit floats on the Intel. So if you wanted to like transcribe the C64 code directly into like Python or whatever, just the math would just not work. So a lot of fun details in floats. Like if anyone is still afraid of them, I totally suggest you just do a deep dive. There's a lot of fun stuff in them.
You could do article about.
There are some ideas about an article for floats for Paged Out, not by me, but another person. So let's see how it goes.
By the way, thank you for helping me out on Twitter that one time I had float problems.
No worries. I guess it was like the story is that Zanit posted some notes, and I was like bored, and I'm looking at the notes. I'm like, "Hey, man, that's bad. Like, that's incorrect." So that's but that's totally random.
Yeah,
man, Zanit doesn't know his stuff.
Oh no, I am fake. I'm an imposter.
That was fun, though. So how did your exam go?
Oh, I passed
on the floats.
I passed.
Nice.
Like, we had one exam was numerical analysis, and one was about computer engineering, and both had to do with floats and stuff, but on different, like, perspective, and I passed both of them.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Do you like floats now?
Depends. I'm a bit slow in, like, converting decimal to binary and or hexadecimal.
I mean, it's an exercise anyway, right? It's not something you really use in day to day.
Yeah, sometimes I think it's like it's an interesting topic to understand.
Yeah.
Why?
I guess I mean from my security career, I think I needed to know how floats exactly work about 3 or 4 times. So it's a matter if you find yourself a problem where you have to do something really in-depth with floats, it's more time optimal to just find a person who knows floats than just than to learn them, but it's still fun.
So I think we're going to transition once again. We're now on to... Sorry. We're now on to quick questions. Now, quick questions is we ask you a question. It's usually this or that, right?
Yeah.
And you got to answer as quick as possible. You don't even think about the repercussions.
That will not work. Not with my contracts I have with my employer. I'm sorry.
Just think about, you know, going as fast as you can. You know, all right. So, Xana, do you want to ask the first question?
Yeah. Linux or Windows?
Both.
Oh.
That's actually a title of my video.
I have on my published channel. All right, I'll ask next one. Bing or Google?
Google, obviously.
And the next one is tabs or spaces?
Spaces.
Wow. Okay. Star Wars or Star Trek?
Can I say neither? I'm sorry.
So it's Lord of the Rings then.
If I get to choose, I would say I enjoyed Lord of the Rings most, then Star Trek, and then Star Wars. I like all three, but I'm not, you know, a diehard fan.
I get that. Mm-hmm. All right. Xanon?
Nintendo or PlayStation?
It's a hard one. Can I say like DOS games or something? But if I have to choose between these one, then Nintendo, I guess.
So DOS games, so like adventure or how, like the command line stuff?
No. Like, I played a lot of fun games like in DOS times and Windows times, I guess too, but like any type of games, starting with Doom or Wolfenstein and going through Warcraft 1, Warcraft 2, then Starcraft on Windows, and Command & Conquer, Dune, Alone in the Dark. Like, there were a lot of great games. So, I'm not saying there are not a lot of great games right now, because that would not be true, but I did like the aesthetics of the games back then. Currently, the graphics are just super amazing, but they're going for realism, I would say. And then the aesthetics were like, you have 256 colors and you can do like color palette cycling, show us what you can do. And they had great ideas sometimes.
Yeah, it was like more artistic in some way.
Well, I guess that's constrained stuff. Like, if you are under constraints, you have to be creative.
Yeah. So like old school retro PC gaming.
Yes, but I do enjoy modern games as well. Like, for example, Breath of the Wild on Nintendo Switch is That's amazing. Beautiful. I really loved it.
Like,
so is Witcher 3.
We got a couple of questions. So talking about career paths, are there any positions related? Blah, blah, blah. Okay. Sorry, I'm trying to like read and think at the same time. So, do you guys feel like there's a whole lot of positions in Europe, like for vulnerability research? Because he feels like a lot are currently in the United States.
But that's a good question. I know there are some positions for vulnerability research in Europe, but vulnerability research is a super hard thing. Like, you have to have a lot of experience in vulnerability research to get a vulnerability research job. It's not an entry-level job, so there aren't too many companies who have teams which do vulnerability research in like anywhere in the world. So it's a super hard job to get. I know at least I think two or three companies in Europe, maybe more. So there are jobs, but yeah, it's a hard to get job.
For sure. And then what is one of the craziest CTF tasks you've ever solved?
Craziest? Okay, that's a good one. I have a couple which come to my mind. I'm not sure if crazy would be the right description for them. I can tell you about a crazy task which the vice captain of Dragon Sector Redford solved. That was an amazing one. And I think I'm just going to tell you about that one. So the idea, it was like a Chinese CTF, if I remember correctly. And what you got was a binary file, a binary, like not an executable file, just a binary file. And the binary file had bytecode of a program which did something, like checked the password and then outputted the flag. Now, the binary was, and the bytecode was fully custom on a fully custom virtual machine. And you didn't get any way to run it. You didn't get the source code or binary of a virtual machine, and you didn't get any IPs where you could run the code. You just got the file with a bytecode and no idea how to go, like, how to even run it, what does it do, and so on. And Redford actually, using only static analysis, created a disassembler, like, figured out the opcode format, and then figured out what is a buffer overflow with something. And exploited it on some server where the task was running, so we couldn't run the code, but the task was listening on some ports, and actually got the flag. So that was super amazing. Actually, I was super impressed by Redford. And in the end, it turned out that it's a really popular virtual machine in China, so like all the Chinese players knew about it, but nobody else basically.
What?
Still, he didn't know that, and he still solved it. So that was extremely impressive and extremely crazy. So I loved it.
That's funny, honestly.
Sounds really crazy.
All right, I feel like we gotta do another transition. So bear in mind,
it's like from the same person that asked about the research. Vulnerability research. If there's a best country to find an entry level position in that field or related field,
it is a hard question. I cannot answer that because I just didn't do recently any market research for positions in like Europe or for other countries. My gut feeling is that security started to be so popular that each country should have some positions and at least a couple of companies which do security. And they usually also have junior positions, not always in honesty, but sometimes. But if I would have to point out one country, I don't know, I would go for countries which the bigger the country, the more positions they are, obviously, but more people in the market as well. So, you know.
So, with that last question from our chat, we can transition over to our last topic.
Let me do the transition.
Okay,
right?
Do the transition.
Was that a stock voice or something?
No.
It should be. You should sell that on some stock. It would be like you'd be a millionaire.
Jeez, yeah, I'd be a millionaire.
Easy.
So the topic is the YouTube hacking guidelines, like the new, in quotes, YouTube guideline.
Yeah, so that's an interesting story, right?
Yeah.
I guess I cannot tell you too much about it. Live Overflow has a great video discussing the topic, and I really liked it. Like, go to Live Overflow's channel and watch that video if you're interested. Now, one thing I can point out is that there was a lot of panic on the internet about YouTube changing the policies, so now all the hacking videos are going to be taken down, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, it turned out in the end that there was no super recent policy change about that. And if you read the policy which was linked and you scroll down a little bit, it said that, yeah, educational content is actually fine. So it turned out to be the video which started all the topic, it was some, let's call it a fluke in the system, because it was reinstated a couple of days later. Mm. So, yeah, it didn't even stay down. Mm. So, yeah, I don't think there is the problem which was discussed. Like, it doesn't exist. That being said, it doesn't look like the system is perfect anyway. So let's see how it goes. I'm pretty sure it's going to be improved in the future.
By the way, so educational content is still okay. You've heard it here first, and
it's what I read on the policy.
So
it's not an official company position, but well, I guess it is since it's in the policy.
Yeah, it's in the policy. So you can read the policies and always read the article to the end, and not only the part that shocks you the most. But did you see that, there were people backing up, the whole hacking content of YouTube and sharing it online as, a backup?
I think I missed that part.
Oh.
Like,
so, like, Like, it was like all the creators were backing their own content, or was it like viewers backing everything up?
Yeah, it was viewers backing up the content and sharing it.
Oh,
I think on the subreddit r/piracy, there's been a lot of like conversation about just like, where's the torrents for like X's channel? Like, there's a lot of stuff for Live Overflow, Xanad. There's just a lot of stuff just like for a bunch of just like security creators, because everyone's scared that like everything's gonna get taken down, kind of thing.
Well, was my channel pirated?
Give me a second. I'll actually check.
Yeah, there were like, I'm not sure who it was, but someone tweeted then like that. It was a tweet that said something like, please don't do this. We have our own backups, or please ask us first if you want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure who it was. But
yeah, like I guess every creator has a different approach to that.
I mean, I'm pretty happy because I don't have a backup of my videos. Well, I have them locally, but yeah.
I wouldn't mind.
I see YouTube.
But I understand why other folks would. So
I see YouTube as my backup strategy. So YouTube does backups. My videos are on YouTube, so I have backups.
Okay.
Yes. Well, thank you for your interesting insights on the YouTube guideline, which still allows educational hacking content. And let's finish up this podcast with like food for thought. What would your alternative job be if you weren't in tech or IT or security?
In IT? If I weren't in IT, so game development is out of the picture. Oh my.
Yeah, but game design is still in.
I would be a book writer who has no money and is homeless.
What book would you write?
Probably some, I don't know, like science fiction or fantasy or something.
Oh. Yeah, you could use the cover from your page doubt magazine.
That's true, but that is a story for an alternative universe where I didn't go into IT, right?
Yeah.
It's a super hard question. Like, I've been doing this from when I'm 6 years old.
Mm.
So thinking about like doing something else is like, wow, that's almost beyond my imagination.
Wow, since 6 years old.
Yeah, basically.
That's a peculiar brag. I'm not even gonna lie.
It's like really early.
Well, you know, it's like your parents buy you a computer for your birthday, and they give you these things called games and these things called like programming language. And you're a child. You have no idea what's the difference, so we play both.
Sorry, yeah. I interrupt you.
Yeah, sorry. I just had one more question from the fans, you know. Do you have any tips for an attack/defense CTF?
Oh, that's a hard one. Tips. I can give you some tips, like, watch out for backdoors, especially if you hijack an exploit from another team and just run it, then it might be backdoored. We got backdoored like that by PPP a couple of times. So that's the greatest tip I can give you. Just like if you plan to launch an exploit from another team, make sure it's backdoored. It's not backdoored. And the same if you want to, like, you know, use their fix for their challenge. Like, make sure it's not backdoor either.
I do believe, so currently I found the r/data hoarder. They're doing a bunch of like hacking videos on Airtable. And I see your channel is currently being prepared to be uploaded. So
ooh. I take that as a compliment, then. Send me a link later. I might download it for a backup as well.
Yeah, I downloaded like mine as well for a backup, like after it was uploaded. So thank you to whoever backed it up and shared it. I mean, it's public anyway, so.
Yeah, but you know, I guess like the discussion here would be about like if you're a full-time YouTuber and you're running ads on your channel and you get some revenue from that, then, well, it's a standard discussion of piracy then, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I personally, as I said, I'm like a Sunday YouTuber, so yeah. I mean, and I, in all honesty, like after my book was published, I was had a lot of thinking about piracy, like should I do anything with ebooks and so on? And in the end, I decided like it's just not worth it. And why would I fight my readers, right? Anyway, if somebody wants to buy, they will buy it. If somebody can buy, they will buy it. If somebody doesn't want to buy, then they won't buy it anyway, and I cannot convince them. So, yeah, but that's like my approach, and I understand that everyone has a different one.
For sure, for sure.
So if anyone has still some questions for Ginvael, now is the time to ask them, because we will wrap it up soon.
No. But it was lovely to have you on the podcast, as always.
Sorry, what?
It was lovely to have everyone on the podcast, as always.
Yeah. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah.
It was fun.
We can do this a yearly thing. So we can see the progress of your Minecraft videos.
Oh, yes. We totally should.
We need updates. We need daily updates on your Twitter for your Minecraft episodes.
Yeah.
I think I have an idea now for the next year's April Fools.
All right.
It doesn't seem that there are any more questions. Maybe let's give them some time to type them if anyone is typing.
Because typing is so hard, you know.
It is. Yeah, like do this experiment. Like tie like a scarf around your eyes and then write a program and see how many typos you make. Non-trivial one, hello world doesn't count.
Aw.
Damn.
I think most of my errors would be with intonation and like missing a new line or something like that.
I feel like we should try and strive to like make a voice controlled like coding, you know, software. So you can just be like, you know, print F, you know, something like that.
There was a great video about it. Like a programmer actually optimized a voice engine for that. And they were using like really like interesting sounds for like enter and so on, so they don't have to tell like new line each time.
Something like for
exactly, and it worked great. Like the person demoed it on the stage, and that was like amazing.
Could you imagine that, like in the office, if this became like mainstream?
I guess you would run into the typical problem of, you know, there is a car with loudspeakers passing near your office, and they are broadcasting really loud a back door. It's like you know, when Vista got this first, like, speech control, then it was one of the issues that, like, a website could start playing some backdooring command, basically, and Vista would execute it, so they had to disable it. So something like when just Vista came out, it was an apparent problem from the beginning, and they disabled it quite quickly. But the same with, like, Alexa, right? I guess there were some ads which were doing like, okay, Alexa, go like and buy this. Voice controlling is hard.
Yeah, for sure, like last week I visited my cousin and he has a Google Home device. And every time I said, okay, Google, like his phone went off, my phone went off, the phone in the kitchen went off. The Google Home thing went off. Okay, my Google went off right now.
I did hear it. That's funny.
Okay, perfectly, so we got a couple more questions, but I think these are for more the, like, you know, starting to, like, learn hacking and stuff like that. Or now we have okay. So, first question, how would you start reverse engineering?
Yeah, so I actually have written a five screen page blog post about it. And I just cannot add anything else, so I gave you a link on the chat. Just go to my blog, look for FAQ, how to learn reverse engineering, and everything I can tell you is written there. Where, like, both exercises, how to approach it, and so on. It's not technical, it's just, like, how to start.
For sure.
It's on the YouTube chat, but I will give you it on the Discord as well.
We can post it in the chat for everybody to join.
With a proper, because I think my message was actually blocked because, you know, spam links and so on.
Oh, remove any web addresses and try again.
Which assembler, NASM, MASM, or which assembler? I'm actually using NetWhite Assembler, NASM mostly, but like that depends really on what you want to do. I also use GNU Assembler quite a lot.
Link is posted right now.
Yep.
We got the link finally. Okay.
We're in.
So, we got another question. When do you start hacking/security?
It's a good question, actually. So, I'm interpreting this, like, what do you have to learn before going into hacking and security?
I think that's and what I ask.
Yeah, I would personally say that the usual way is either you have to know some programming or you have to be a sysadmin, like you have to know some administration about Windows, Linux, or whatever. And then it's a natural transition into learning more about security, like writing secure code or how to secure your system, and then you progress into a security specialist. But the usual way, I would say networking is also there, or like electronics or whatever. And maybe reverse engineering as well. Because reverse engineering is like usually security, but there are, like, for example, in game publishing, right? There are reverse engineers needed to do game translations, for example. Because if a game uses a really weird format, the game developer doesn't want to give you the source code for loaders for this format, you have to reverse engineering, like translate all the strings which are on the graphics and then re-encode it for the game to publish it in your language. So. But if you know some reverse engineering from game publishing, for example, you can also easily transition to a security position, I would say. That being said, and also like for reverse engineering, usually you need some programming anyway. So, well, usually I know folks who are great reverse engineers and who started to learn programming after already being a great reverse engineering folks.
That seems kind of counterintuitive for me to first learn reverse engineering.
Okay. Yeah, for me too. But like that person proved me wrong, so.
All right, I think we got two more questions. Aim Impotent asked, how to get to know the PE format by heart?
I guess like do stuff related to PE format, as in write, for example, an application which displays you all the headers about the PE, then write an exe compressor, and then write a decompressor for it, you know, a packer and an unpacker, or some protector and deprotector for it. And then write like a loader, a PE loader, that does, for example, load library, but without using the actual load library, but only using your code, which parses the PE stuff. So it's like I recommend a hands-on approach, because then you learn all the details you wouldn't think about if you didn't do this hands-on approach. If you're thinking about just reading and memorizing the standard, that won't work, at least in my experience. Like, just be hands-on about it. Do write some code which messes with the PE format.
And the And then I think the last question we'll answer is malware analysis a good field to get paid?
Well, it is a job, so with jobs you usually get paid. If you're asking if it's a good field to get a good pay, then not really, because malware analysis is usually an entry-level job, unless you become like a specialist in it. But it's considered to be an entry-level job.
Okay, I think we're going to do one more question and then wrap it up. So please stop. All right. So what do you think about a 21st century frat?
I'm not really sure I understand the question, to be honest.
Okay. Here, I'm going to message it because I feel like I'm cutting out a lot.
Right. Yeah, I see the question on the chat. That being
okay.
I'm still not sure if I understand the question correctly.
Yeah, I don't understand it.
Is the question about like the newest issues of Frag and what do I think about them, or what do I think about making a new magazine which would be like Frag but would be more like modern? Or for example, the question might be like, is there anything like Frag which is more modern? That being said, Frag is still coming out, right? But like, or rather, the articles which are submitted to Frag are being published without waiting for the new issue, right? I think that's like they changed the publication model.
I feel like you hit that one out of the park. Okay, last question. Okay, Jesus Christ. So what do you think? What do you think which field is considered to be hacking god? Like everyone praises you.
Currently, I would say that would be browser security, like, you know, exploiting browsers and jailbreaking breaking like whatever is in the console protections, like game console protections. I would say that would be it currently, the most hot topics.
All right.
It's not IoT. Everyone does IoT security. I'm sorry.
Well, I don't do IoT security.
Put a damn bow on this thing because we're not taking any more questions.
Okay, so
I will not.
Thank you, everybody, for joining today. Thank you for your questions. Very interesting questions, some of them. Yeah, I hope you know now what kind of job you want to get, like, paid a lot. And thank you, Ginwell, again, for joining today and answering our questions.
Yeah, thank you.
If you guys do have any more questions, you can always join the Discord and ask them there.
The link should be in the description.
Should be.
Yeah. So join now. And make sure to subscribe to Ginwell, of course, and also to Defnol. And I'm not sure, Juke, do you still have a channel?
I think I have a channel, but I like deleted everything that when I recorded like 3 years ago, like Minecraft videos. So shucks.
Oh no, the Minecraft videos. You could be famous by now, but no.
So,
like, this Minecraft is popping up, so
I mean, maybe
we should make more Minecraft.
Whip it out, you know.
So, everybody at home, have a nice evening, or afternoon, or morning, or whatever. See you in the next episode. Bye.
Yeah, thank you. See you. Bye bye.
Au revoir.